In white, the WB of the Warner Brothers shield. The B vanishes and the center of the W becomes a red letter I. Warner Independent Pictures, a Time Warner company. Chalk is rubbed over a childlike drawing of a man in a circle. The chalk is blown away and the circle glows red. Under it in block capitals, 1,000 words. Words flicker on the screen. Warner Independent Pictures presents, in association with 1,000 words, a Section 8 Detour Film Production, 3 Arts Entertainment Production. A Richard Linklater film. 7 years from now, Anaheim, California. A rotoscope animated feature, giving live action the appearance of being hand-drawn. A male with thick, straggly black hair scratches his head. Bugs are crawling over his hair and his arms. In vest and boxers, he rises from an armchair and scratches his body. Keanu Reeves, Robert Downey Jr., Woody Harrelson, Winona Ryder, Rory Cochrane. The young man makes his way into a scruffy bathroom. He stands in front of the mirror, still furiously scratching his head. He washes his hair in the shower, the bugs scuttling all over his body. Bugs swirl down the plug hole. A scanner darkly. Casting by Denise Charmian. Costume designer Carrie Perkins. Music by Graham Reynolds. Edited by Sandra Adair, ACE. The man steps out of the shower, toweling himself dry. The bugs have disappeared. A beard shadow darkens the lower half of his face. He scowls and takes his hand to his head. A bug jumps out. He convulses and starts to scratch as the bugs once again crawl over his body. He looks under the sink and takes out an aerosol can marked insecticide. He sprays his hair and body with the yellow dust. Production designer Bruce Curtis, director of photography Shane F. Kelly, lead animators Sterling Allen, Evan Cagle, Nick Derrington, C.S. Jennings, Lance Myers. The man, Freck, crosses to his collie dog lying on the bed. He crouches beside it and starts examining the animal. Bugs emerge from the dog. Head of animation, Bob Sabiston, Jason Archer, Paul Beck. Freck scrubs the dog, which is in the bath with him. Based on the novel by Philip K. Dick, written for the screen and directed by Richard Linklater, Freck's on the phone.
I looked them up. They're aphids. They're in my hair, on my skin, in my lungs, and the pain, Barris. It's unreasonable. They're all over the place. Oh, and they've completely gotten Millie, too.
Okay, wait. Just listen to me. You gotta get out of there. I'll meet you over at Toast Cafe at 3, okay? Calm down. Everything's gonna be fine. Before you go, put a couple of them in a jar so I can get them examined. I mean, I'm sure they're just aphids, but you never know. Just in case, okay? Just do it. Relax.
Barris, who wears dark-framed spectacles and smokes a cigarette, blows smoke rings as he drops the phone on the floor and continues reading his book. In his apartment, Freck places bugs in a screw-top jar. Other bugs scuttle across his floor. He holds up the glass jar and examines its contents. A man addresses a meeting.
Gentlemen of the Anaheim, 709th chapter of the Brown Bear Lodge, we have a wonderful opportunity this afternoon. For you see, the County of Orange has provided us with a chance to hear from and put questions to an undercover narcotics agent from the Sheriff's Department who is out there on our behalf fighting this awful Substance D epidemic. It's no secret we're living in a culture of addiction. Nearly 20% of the population can now be classified as addicts. And as far as anyone can tell, there is but one company that is working and helping the situation. That company is our sponsor, New Path.
The man in a suit at a podium stands in front of an audience of businessmen.
Now you will notice that you can barely see this man because he is wearing what is called a scramble suit. The exact same suit he wears and in fact must wear during certain parts, in fact most parts of his daily activities of law enforcement. This man, whom we will call Fred, because that is the code name under which he reports the information he gathers, once within the scramble suit, cannot be detected by even the latest in voice and facial recognition technology. The scramble suit itself is purportedly made up of approximately 1.5 million fraction representations of men, women, and children in every variant, making the wearer of a scramble suit the ultimate everyman.
This is terrible.
He looks, does he not, like a constantly shifting vague blur and nothing more, am I right? Let's hear it for the vague blur.
Fred's face, hair, and clothes are constantly changing. He rises, crosses to the podium, and extends a hand to the speaker. Fred holds up his hand.
If you saw me on the street without the suit on, you'd probably say, there goes a total dope fiend. You'd feel aversion and walk away. I don't look like you. I can't afford to. My life depends on it.
I'm not going to tell you first what I do as an undercover officer engaged in tracking down dealers and the source of their illegal drugs in the streets of our cities and corridors of our schools here in Orange County. I'm going to tell you what I'm afraid of. What I fear night and day is that our children, your children and my children.
I have two little ones. Very little. But not too little to be addicted. Calculatedly addicted to substance D for profit by drug terrorists. As many of you know, our military and their associates are actively engaged in countries where it is believed the organic component of substance D, a small, highly toxic flower, originates.
The talk is illustrated.
And while our troops are down there fighting for us, it is up to each and every one of us here to do our part in eliminating the demand for this drug. It's important you, as citizens, continue to report all suspicious activity and individuals. For simply put, if there were no demand in our society, there would be no market for these leeches to exploit.
Heads nod. Inside the scramble suit is Bob Octor. An indicator in it reads live.
Each day, this disease takes its toll on us. And each day, the flow of profits and where they go.
Well, it isn't about the profits anyhow. It's something else. Oh, what'd you see happen? Like if you were a diabetic and you didn't have money for insulin.
Would you steal to get the money or just die?
I think you better go back to the prepared text.
The indicator switches to HQ.
I forgot it. I think I have a block against this shit.
Repeat after me, but make it sound casual. Where the profits flow, we will soon...
The audience begins to grow restless.
And then retribution will swiftly follow. At that moment, I would not for the life of me want to be in their shoes. Got it?
You know why I've got a block against this bullshit? Because this is what gets people on drugs. It's also disgusting when I lurch off and become a user.
Come on, Fred. Just say the shit and get it over with.
The indicator goes back to live. Octor rubs his head.
Anyway. Substance D. D.
D is for dumbness and despair and desertion. The desertion of your friends from you, you from your friends. Everyone from everyone.
Isolation and loneliness and hating and suspecting each other. D is finally death. Slow death.
From the head down.
Well,
that's it.
Octor walks away. The first speaker leads the applause.
Okay, let's eat.
Freck is in his yellow car, driving along a town street. He's hunched over the steering wheel. A white police car comes up behind him. He spots it and imagines a conversation.
All right, what's your name?
My name is...
Oh, you don't know your name? Well, that's interesting. Probable cause. Out of the car, sir.
Freck is cuffed.
Now, you have the right to remain silent until... And anything you say can and will be used against you when you, fuck this shit!
The imaginary cop shoots Freck's head off. He pulls up in a parking bay and watches in his rearview mirror as the police car drives past. Freck picks up the screw-top glass jar in which he placed the bugs. It's empty. Freck's eyes flit from side to side. Still in the scramble suit, Arctor walks along a corridor lined with bags, files, and cabinets. He enters a door with a green flashing triangular light above it. He peels the scramble suit from over his head. He unfastens a blue doorknob and a cabinet slides out. He pulls the suit down over his body and steps out of it. Arctor, a tall, thin man with a shaped beard, tousled hair and piercing brown eyes, flicks the suit up with his foot, hangs it up and takes a jacket from the cabinet. He puts it on, closes the cabinet and walks out. He goes through a door with a flashing green light above it. Outside, he takes a paper bag from his jacket, rips it open and hauls out a cell phone. He dials a number. A fair-haired girl in a convertible answers her cell phone.
Hello?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right.
Anything wrong?
This fucker stole $50 worth of shit from us today, and my boss said it was somehow my fault, and it's coming out of my paycheck, which I don't even think is legal. I mean, can you legally do that?
They're monitored.
Yeah, they can't do that. They say... Nice enough, huh? I'll check. Hey, Donna, can I get anything from you?
Yeah, how much?
10.
10?
Yeah, I'm hurt really bad. I'll pay you back later.
Yeah, okay. Say, day after tomorrow?
Sooner?
I'll come by later. Like around 8?
Yeah. I'll see you later.
He's identified.
Okay. All right, bye.
The listener presses no arrest.
See, all symptoms are purposeful, be they positive or negative. See what I'm saying? In this case, I wouldn't feel strangely about it because just the idea of turning yourself over to a new path for rehabilitation is only naturally going to make you a little apprehensive, but that's just a manifestation of the fear. That's the D talking.
Now, the first thing I hear that when you go into the new path, what they do to you, they cut your picker off.
No, they can never get away with that. Are you kidding me? Come on, that's an urban myth. It's actually the spleen that's remanded in their custody.
What?
Hey, how is everything?
Everything is super good.
Not with me. I got a lot of problems nobody else has.
No, come on. More people than you'd think, and more people each day. This is a world getting progressively worse. Can we not agree on that? What's on the dessert menu?
Would you like to maybe order some dessert?
Like what?
Barris mentally undresses the waitress.
Well, we have fresh strawberry pie. And a fresh peach pie that we make here ourselves.
As Barris is lost in his reverie, Freck decides.
No, we don't want any dessert.
All right.
Fucking fruit pies are for old ladies. What do you think about the new bath?
Well, it doesn't matter what I think. I kind of have to tip my hat to any entity that could bring so much integrity to evil. I mean, imagine it's a seemingly voluntary privatized gulag just managed to eliminate the meddling middlemen of public accountability and free will and wrapped up in a little bow and given to the public like a gift. I mean, come on, this is awe-inspiring stuff.
Freck considers.
I heard you have to go cold turkey.
Cold turkey doesn't even apply to Substance D. Unlike the legacy of inherited predisposition to addictive behavior or substances, this needs no genetic assistance. There's no weekend warriors on the D. You're either on it or you haven't tried it.
Well, I like it.
Yeah. How many caps do you take per day?
It's very difficult to determine, but not that many.
Well, like the old school pharmacopoeia, tolerance develops. You know, these visions of bugs, they're just garden variety psychosis, but a clear indication that you've hurtled over the initial fun and euphoric phase and passed on to the next phase. News from the guinea pig grapevine suggests that whatever it is, we won't know until it's way too late. You see, we're all canaries in the coal mine on this one.
I do think I have another source. That Donna chick.
Bob's girl?
Yeah.
Yeah, his girl. Although I know for a fact he never gets in her pants.
Really? But he talks like he does.
Oh, yeah. That's Bob Arctor. He talks like he does many things. It's not the same, my friend. It's not the same thing. Donna has an aversion to bodily contact. And junkies lose their interest in sex, you realize, due to a organ swelling up from vasoconstriction, and I have observed in her an inordinate failure of sexual arousal, not just toward Bob Arctor, but...
Barris smiles.
Other males as well.
I can't believe she doesn't put out.
Well, she would, if she were handled right.
He glances over his shoulder.
For instance, I could show you how to sleep with her for less than $3.
I don't want to sleep with her. I want to buy from her.
Donna does coke, right?
$3 doesn't get you a line of coke.
That's where you're wrong, pal.
Fast forward. Barris and Freck go on a journey. They leave the diner, get into Freck's aging Datsun, and drive off. The car heads down a freeway, makes a couple of turns, and arrives at a grocery store. Freck and Barris go into the store. They're watched by a policeman as Barris buys a can of deodorant and he and Freck leave the store. They get in the old yellow Datsun and drive off. In real time, they arrive outside a dilapidated house in the suburbs. They get out of the car and head towards the house, Barris pausing to check an overflowing mailbox. Inside, Barris sprays the contents of the deodorant can into a plastic bag, inflating it.
What they've deliberately done is mixed the cocaine with the oil so that it cannot be extracted, but my knowledge of chemistry is such that I know precisely how to separate the oil from the cocaine.
He seals the bag.
Now I freeze it.
In the freezer.
Cause cocaine crystals to rise to the top because they are lighter than the oil. The terminal step, of course, I keep to myself, but suffice to say, it involves an intricate and methodological process of filtering.
How long is it going to be in there?
Just about a half an hour.
You know, I've been thinking, Barris, even if we do get a pure gram of cocaine out of this deal, I don't want to use it on Donna. I mean, you know, to get in her pants, I'd be like buying her.
No, it'd just be an exchange. You give her a gift, and she gives you one.
Barris makes to touch Freck, who recoils.
Besides, we're talking about Bob's girl here. And this is his house. He's my friend. He lets you and Luckman live here.
There's a great deal about Bob Arctor you're not aware of.
Orange County, Precinct 5236. Two cops in scramble suits.
How did New Path rig it where they're the one place in our entire country that can't be scanned? All the rest of us can be tracked 24 hours a day, but no, not at New Path.
Hey, that's their contract with the government.
But I think you're right. It would be a good place for a dealer to hide.
What about Donna Hawthorne?
I'm systematically working up to her supplier. The quantities I'm buying now are basically beyond her capacity. She doesn't have enough front money to handle it. So it's just a matter of time before she's hooking me up with the next person up the ladder. I think someday soon we'll have somebody who really knows something, and they'll be worth busting.
What about Jim Barris and Ernie Luckman?
Same shit, nothing new.
What about Charles Freck and Robert Arctor?
Up to pretty much the same old thing.
Even Arctor?
One of the cops is Arctor.
Arctor? Yeah, he doesn't
seem to be doing much. Still working his nowhere handy breaking tire job. Drops a few caps of death cut with meth during the day.
I'm not so sure. We just got a tip in from an informant that Arctor has funds above and beyond what he gets from his little job. And when we checked into it, we found he wasn't even working there full time. Yeah.
The other cop is Hank.
Who's this informant?
We don't know. Undoubtedly, it's a vengeance burn. That's how these druggies are. I mean, boning in on each other every time they get pissed off. Anyhow, as of now, I'm officially assigning you to observe Arctor. If we're ever going to get to the bottom of this, I have a hunch it'll be through this guy.
So will that mean full-time viewer recording?
We got no choice. We'll install a new holographic scanning system. You'll just let us know when they're out of the house, and we'll want storage and printout on everything.
Barris rides a bike into the house.
Total providence. I am walking home. I find myself on the street. I am rarely on, and look what I obtained for a mere $50.
What is it?
Oh, this would be an 18-speed bike of the all-terrain variety. I noticed it in a neighbor's yard, and I acquired as to its availability. They have four of them.
So I made a cash offer of $50. They acquiesced. They actually threw in these lemon yellow racing pants. They actually even hoisted it over the fence for me, which I found to be very neighborly.
Well, that's weird. I didn't know you could get an 18-speed bike nearly new for $50. It's amazing what you can get for $50. I'll give you 60 right now, no questions asked.
You know, this bike looks a lot like the bike that this girl lives across the street from me had that got ripped off about a month ago. This bike could be hot. They probably jacked it, these hoister friends of yours.
Sure they did. I mean, if they've got four and selling it that cheap.
Right? You should at least show it to her so she can see if it's hers.
Yeah, okay, I can do that, but this is a boy's bike, okay? So it can't be, not to invalidate your intuition, but it's not possible. Thank you.
Why do you say it's an 18-speed when it only has 9 gears?
Huh? What?
Yeah. 6 right here, 3 at the other end of the chain. 6 + 3 = 9. It's a 9-speed bike.
Yeah, but even a 9-speed bike for $50, you still got a good deal.
Okay, those guys told me it was 18 speeds. I just got griefed. I just got...
Wait! Wait. Now I count 8. 6 here, and then 2 in the front. That makes 8.
What do you think happened to the missing gears?
Think? I know. They were probably working on it, these gypsy grifters, with improper tools and no technical knowledge, no understanding of reverse engineering, and when they attempted to reassemble it, they panicked, they got scared, and they left 9 orphan gears. They're just laying on the floor. They're probably still there on the floor of the garage.
Let's just go rescue the orphan gears, dude!
Don't you see that that's part of the plan? They're going to try to sell them to me, not give them to me as they rightfully should have, as included in a part of the original sale price. Oh, my God, there's no telling what else they've... And switched.
Yeah, but all of if all of us go together, oh, they'll give them back. Oh, you bet they will. Oh, you bet they will. Let's just go as a team, okay?
Wait. Are you sure there are only 9 gears on this bike?
8.
Okay, 8, 9, whatever. Don't you think that before we go over and accuse and start some shit, we should find out for sure?
Absolutely right, Donna. Who do we know who's an authority on this type of bike?
Blackman falls on Donna.
We are all way too close to this. There's only one thing we can do to thwart the plot of these albino shape-shifting lizard bitches. We are going to take this bike outside, ask the first person we see. We're going to introduce some novelty. That way we get an objective viewpoint.
I'm fine, but I'm...
By the way, I might take you up on that $60 offer.
No, that was for an 18-speed.
Oh,
now, for this, 18
God.
Minus 10, I'll give you $23.75.
Are you certain that's the right math on that?
Come in.
Octor, out of his scramble suit, steps into a lab.
You are Officer Fred?
Yes. Have a seat, please.
He shuts the door behind him and sits down at a table in front of the two medics.
All right, Fred.
We're going to administer several easy tests and there will be no physical discomfort involved.
If this is about the speech I gave to
them... What this is about stems from a recent departmental survey showing that several undercover agents have been admitted to neural aphasia clinics during the last month.
You're conscious of the high factor of addictiveness of Substance D?
Of course I am.
Of course, these tests in no way pertain to the addictive properties of Substance D, but to... Well, let's start with the set ground test first. Within the apparently meaningless lines is an object that we would all recognize. You're to tell me what that object is and point to it in the total field.
In many of those taking Substance D, a split between the right hemisphere and the left hemisphere of the brain occurs, which results in a defect within both the percept and cognitive systems, although apparently the cognitive continues to function normally. Have you located the familiar object in this line drawing? It should just jump right out at you.
I see a Coke bottle.
A soda pop bottle is correct.
Was it in the speech I gave? Maybe it seemed I showed a little bilateral dysfunction there. I mean, might have seemed a little slushed.
Are you getting any cross-chatter?
What?
A cross-chatter between hemispheres.
If there's damage to the left hemisphere, where the linguistic skills are normally located, then sometimes the right hemisphere will fill in to the best of its ability.
Octor shakes his head.
I don't know. I mean, not that I'm aware of.
What do you see in this second picture?
She puts a picture card in front of him, and he looks at it.
A sheep.
The man makes a note.
Show me the sheep.
An impairment of set background discrimination can get you into a heap of trouble. Instead of perceiving no forms, you perceive faulty forms.
Octo picks up the card.
So there is no sheep here, is there? Was I close?
But this is not a Rorschach test where some abstract block can be interpreted many ways by many subjects. This has one specific object. In this case, a dog.
Dog. What's that mean, that I saw a sheep instead?
Who knows? Only after the entire set has been run can we make a determination.
Why this is superior to the Rorschach is that it's not interpretive. There are many wrongs, but there is only one right. You either get it or you don't. And if you show a run of not getting it, then we have a fix on a functional impairment, and we dry you out for a while until you test better later on.
A new path?
Undoubtedly.
Now, what do you see in this drawing among these particular black and white lines?
A pyramid.
Plastic dog shit. The little kind you can buy and put in someone's bed. Can I go now?
You know, Fred, if you keep your sense of humor like you do, you just might make it after all.
Make it? Make what? The team? The girl? Make good? Make do? Make out? Make sense? Make money? Make time? Define your terms. The Latin for make is facere, which always reminds me of fuckere, which is Latin for to fuck. And I haven't been getting shit in that department lately. If you guys are psychologist types and you've been monitoring my endless debriefings with Hank, tell me, what the hell is Donna Steele? What do I do? I mean, how do you make it with that kind of sweet, unique, stubborn little chick?
You could buy her flowers.
Really?
This time of year, you can get little blue flowers at any nursery. Give them to her.
Unrecognizable, wearing his scramble suit, Octo mooches down a corridor at the police station and knocks on Hank's door.
Yeah.
He goes inside.
Hey, Fred. Glad you could make it. This is the informant who phoned in about Bob Arctor, and I mentioned him.
Yes.
Anyway, he phoned in again, and we challenged him to step forth and identify himself. Do you know this man?
It's Barris.
Sure do. You're James Barris, aren't you? So, Mr. Barris, what's your information?
I have evidence that Mr. Arctor is part of a covert terrorist drug organization. They're well-funded, and they have arsenals of weapons at their disposal.
And what is this organization?
I believe it to be political in nature, and very much against this country, an enemy of the U.S.
Can you give us any specific names of anyone else in this organization, a persons Arctor meets with?
Yes, Ms. Donna Hawthorne. On a variety of pretexts, he will go over to her place of residence and colludes with her regularly, I've noticed.
Colludes?
Colludes.
What do you mean?
Well, I've followed him in my own car without his knowledge.
He goes there often?
Yes, as often as...
She is his girl.
Right. Mr. Arctor also...
Hold up. You think there's anything to this, Fred?
I think we should definitely look at his evidence.
All right. Bring in your evidence. All of it. We want names most of all. Now, have you seen Mr. Arctor involved in any large quantities of drugs?
To be certain. And I have carefully taken samples, again, without his knowledge, when the opportunity presented itself, strictly for you to analyze, and I can bring those in as well.
Great. Is there anything else you wish to state at this time?
There is. Mr. Arctor is an addict. He is addicted to substance D, and I fear that his mind has become deranged over time, and he is now officially to be considered dangerous.
Dangerous?
Yes, he is having episodes that would occur with brain damage from substance D, and I'm quite certain also that the optic chiasm has deteriorated somewhat due to a weak ipsilateral component.
This sort of unsupported speculation, as I've already warned you, Mr. Barris, is completely worthless. Now, we'll be sending an officer with you to gather your evidence.
May I?
All right? An officer out of uniform, of course.
No. See, I could be murdered. As I've already said, Mr. Arctor has this cachet of weapons.
Mr. Barris, we appreciate this and the extreme risk you are taking. And if it works out and your information is valuable in obtaining a conviction, then naturally...
But that is not the reason I'm here. You see, this man is, he just has a soul sickness. His brain is damaged from the use of this toxic and most terrible substance. Nonetheless, the reason I am here is I feel that I may have certain qualities that would qualify me to perhaps come over to your side, to surrender and come to the side of law enforcement in general. I would like an employment application.
All right, we don't care why you're here. We only care whether your evidence and material amount to anything. The rest is your problem.
Arctur holds the office door open for Barris, who gets to his feet.
Perhaps at the desk I can get an employment to...
Back of the house.
Gentlemen, you are about to witness for approximately 61 cents of ordinary household materials the perfect homemade silencer.
Barris, the neighbors are going to hear.
They only call in murders in this neighborhood.
Plus, Freckledeck, it's a silencer. They're not going to hear anything.
Well... I'm pretty fucking sure they're illegal.
In this day and age, the type of society we find ourselves living in, every person of worth needs to have a gun at all times to protect themselves. And we're off. Un, deux, trois.
The silencer explodes. Inside, Arctur is wakened by the shot and alarmed grabs an automatic pistol. Outside.
That sure is some silencer.
Yes, what it did was augment the sound rather than dampen it. But I almost have it. I believe I have it in principle anyway.
Oh, well, the good news is, regardless of what you do next time, it'll be a silencer to us because we're now deaf!
Bare-chested and disheveled, Arctur steps out of his room, still clutching the automatic. He looks in a mirror and studies his reflection. He's about 40, with dark hair and eyes and several days' stubble.
What happened? How'd I get here?
The dingy house he's in gives way to a bright family home. Two young girls are in the living room, one playing drafts with her mother.
Okay, it's your move now.
The second girl plays with a hula hoop. Arctur sits in an armchair reading a paper. He looks up.
Anyone want some popcorn?
Yeah!
He gets up and, swigging from a bottle of beer, goes through into the kitchen. He takes a packet of popcorn from a cupboard, and as he straightens up, he bangs his head. He throws the popcorn down and goes over to the open cupboard door he banged his head on. There's blood on his hand.
The pain. So unexpected and undeserved had for some reason cleared away the cobwebs. I realized I didn't hate the cabinet door. I hated my life. My house. My family.
Are you okay, Daddy? What happened?
My backyard. My power more. Nothing would ever change. Nothing new could ever be expected. It had to end. And it did. Now, in the dark world where I dwell, ugly things and surprising things and sometimes little wondrous things spill out at me constantly. And I can count on nothing.
He looks out of the window and sees Barris try out his Mark II silencer. It explodes like the first. The next day, Arctur drives down a freeway in an old Chevrolet sedan. Blonde Luckman is in the passenger seat and Barris is in the back. Luckman swats a fly.
Lead fly, got it.
That would be a Thelma corn fly.
Oh yeah, Miss Pickett. If I'd known it was harmless...
I would have killed it myself. Thanks for the memories. You had such beautiful...
Daddy Slowpoke.
Get around.
You know what to do. Your move, Peterbilt.
That's a big 10-4.
Got nothing on us.
They overtake a truck.
Get on light!
Hey, Bob, go right.
Hey, not so fast,
Bob. You are flying. It's all right.
The throttle is jammed.
Steady. It's all right.
Slow down.
The car speeds on.
Jesus. Son of a bitch!
Arctur swerves the car around a tanker as it barrels on down the freeway. Arctur stamps on the brake to no avail. Luckman reaches across and takes the keys out of the ignition.
Let us over! Emergency! We're getting over! Emergency!
They coast to a halt on the hard shoulder.
What the hell was that?
Jesus fucking Christ!
What the hell in the hootenanny was that?
The return spring on the throttle cable.
Look, the gas. Is the cutter broken?
Give her a look.
They get out of the car and open the hood. Steam is pouring from the bonnet. Arctur opens it. He unscrews the airbox and removes it, exposing the carburetor. Luckman has a look.
Ah! It's not the spring. It's the linkage from the pedal to the cart, see? It fell apart so the gas pedal didn't push back out when you took your foot off. But it doesn't explain why.
There's a safety override on the carb when linkage parts.
Shouldn't this locking ring hold the cable in place? I mean, how could it just
come off like that?
Let's have a look. Let's probe a little. All right. This screw has been turned all the way out, the idle screw.
So when the linkage parted, it went the other way, up instead of down.
Wait, now how could that happen? There is no way that that screw could turn itself all the way out like that accidentally.
No way.
Luckman gets agitated.
Motherfucker! They did it deliberately! We almost died! They almost fucking got us, man!
Now, to loosen the lock ring and nut assembly that holds the accelerator linkage rods together, a special tool would be needed, several in fact. I'm going to estimate it'll take about a half an hour to get this back together. I have the tools, though.
Back at the house.
Correct. Well, we can always go to a repair center and borrow theirs, or get a tow truck out here.
As they lean against the roadside barrier, Barris shakes a couple of pink pills out of a container and gives them to Luckman, who swallows them. He offers two more to Arctur. Arctur stares uncertainly at the pills.
You know, maybe that's what's fucking us up. Fucking up our brains. We're gonna wind up like Freck soon.
No.
Okay, these are for us. And we're going to suggest that you take several with the implicit acceptance of the fact that Substance D cannot screw up an accelerator linkage or a carb idle adjustment.
Yeah, dude, don't blame the drugs.
Arctur takes the pills.
Well, so much for our great road trip to San Diego, Bob. I told you we should have gone to San Francisco.
What, like going to San Francisco would not have caused this problem with the engine?
Because you're going north, it screws this way. And when you're going south, it screws that way.
If we were in Australia.
The Chevrolet is taken away on a tow truck. The guys sit with the driver in the truck.
This proves you got somebody out to get you real bad, Bob. I just hope that the house is still there when we get back.
Yeah, I didn't think of that.
I wouldn't worry about it too much.
You wouldn't. Christ, they may have broken in and ripped off all we got. All Bob's got anyhow. What if they stomp the animals?
Don't worry about it. I left a little surprise for them.
What?
Yes, anyone entering the house while we are gone today will receive a little surprise, a little something I perfected early this morning.
What kind of surprise? It's my house, Jim. You should ask me before you start wiring up my house.
Why would you get so uptight about protecting your house from intruders? Why would you care?
I'm just saying it's my house, that's all. You can't start going around booby-trapping my house.
Okay, okay. I mean, geez. Or as the Germans would say, Liza, which translates to be cool. Just be cool.
So what did you do?
If the front door is opened while we are in absentia, thumbnail-sized auxiliary motion detector digital memory camera start recording.
You should have told me.
What if they come in through the back door or the bathroom window like that infamous Beatles song?
To increase their chances of entering via the front door rather than in other less usual places, I fortuitously left the front door unlocked.
Suppose they don't know it's unlocked.
Well, that's why I left a note on the door.
You're kidding me.
No. Yes, but no. But yes.
Are you bullshitting us or not? I just simply never know with you. Is he fucking with us, Bob?
We'll see when we get back. If there's a note on the door and it's unlocked, we'll know he isn't lying.
We'll probably take the note down after ripping off and vandalizing the house and then locking the door behind them so we don't know. We will never know. It's still that great area.
Of course I'm kidding. Only a psychotic would do that. Leave the front door of the house unlocked with a note on the door.
What'd you write on the note, Jim?
I wrote, come on in, the door's unlocked.
He did it. He really did it.
This is the only way we're going to know for sure Bob has been doing this stuff. Is that not what is of primary importance?
Okay, I'm still gray here. Now, did you do it or not?
Is it really that suspenseful?
Did you?
He did it.
Please, it doesn't matter. We're going to be home shortly.
Did you?
We'll be home presently.
The pickup truck deposits the Chevrolet outside Arctur's rat pit of a house. The house sticks out like a sore thumb. in the otherwise neat and tidy middle-class neighborhood. Luckman, Barris, and Arctor go over to the front door, which has no note on it. Luckman pulls the fly screen open. He gestures to Barris, who shrugs. Luckman opens the front door and they go inside. A couple of cats scuttle out of the way. Barris takes a revolver from a drawer and poses with it in cop show fashion. Luckman picks up a bow, but omits to find an arrow to go with it. They check around. The coast appears to be clear.
Oh, wow. Barris, I can see you're right. This scrupulous covering over of all the signs they would have otherwise left testifies to their thoroughness. You're an idiot.
Wait.
What's
that? Huh? Huh? Come here, look at this. Look at this.
It's still hot cigarette, but it sure is. Wait a second. They lit a joint while they were here, Bob. Bucket, Barris is right. There was somebody here. This roach is still hot. Smell it.
Yes. And that roach may not have been left here by accident. This evidence may not be a slip-up.
So what now?
Maybe they were here specifically to plant drugs in the house, setting us up, then phoning in a tip later. It could be in the phone. It could be in the wall outlets. We're going to have to go through this house and get it absolutely clean before the phone is in, unless they already have. We might only have minutes.
You check the wall sockets. I'll tear this barn apart.
Wait, hold on. If they see us scrambling around right before the raid.
What raid?
If we are running around frantically trying to flush the drugs, then we can't allege, even though it's true that we didn't know they were here. They're going to find us holding them. Or maybe that's part of the plan.
Oh, shit. We can't do anything. We're fucked, man.
Barris, what about the super secret surveillance cameras?
What?
The doodads, man.
Oh, yes, of course. Right, of course. How could I have forgotten? Oh, this should be extremely informational at this point. I believe this will tell us a great deal.
He prods at some video equipment. Nothing happens.
Although it probably wouldn't have proven to be that important.
Let me guess. Didn't record.
Allow me to suggest that it's highly likely that the tow truck was bugged, thus affording them ample time and opportunity to deploy an operative to defuse and otherwise erase the evidence obtained. But at this point, we have no other recourse in view of their evasive tactics. I mean, there is, of course, one thing you could do, Bob, although it would take time.
Arctor looks at him.
Sell the house and move out?
Luckman's gutted.
But hell, this is our home.
You could make a considerable profit. On the other hand, you might have to take a loss in a quick sale.
What reason should I give for selling? They always ask. Can't tell the truth. You really shouldn't tell the truth at all. Well, why can't we tell the truth? We put it in the LA Times. Modern. Three-bedroom tract house with two bathrooms for easy and fast flushing. High-grade drugs stashed throughout all rooms, included in sale price. It could actually increase the value.
But they might be calling and asking what kind of drugs are stashed, and we don't know. It could be anything.
And prospective buyers might inquire as to the quantity.
Yeah, we don't know at this point. It could be ounces of weed or pounds of heroin or hits of E or kilocaps of D.
Hey, you guys. Look! Jesus! What the fuck is wrong with you?
It's Donna.
I came in, like the note said. It didn't say when you were gonna get back, so I just sat around for a while and ended up crashing.
Love your sweater.
Don't touch me. Man, you guys are making so much noise.
Sorry.
Woke me up.
Did you smoke a joint before you crashed?
Yeah. Otherwise, I can't ever sleep. You know, you guys should seriously think about maybe locking the doors when you leave. Otherwise, you could get ripped off and it'd be your own fault.
It's all your fault.
Say you were going to sell the house? Or is that, you know, me dreaming? That's what I heard sounded weird.
Yeah, we're all dreaming.
Quiet, steady. Steady. Kidney.
As Fred, Arctor's with Hank.
So the information from the holoscanners installed in Arctor's house are transmitted back here. to Station 12879. This'll be your new home away from home, pal. It's pretty intuitive. You'll just be watching and scanning through recorded information. You can go live, of course, but that tends to be excruciatingly boring. And then you see where these hollows are placed. What would be great is if they ever need servicing or changing out, you can do that yourself while no one else is around.
But wouldn't you then see me on the tapes doing that?
No, for that you just edit yourself out. But be sure to include yourself in the tapes from time to time. Because if you systematically edit yourself out, then we can deduce who you are through a process of elimination, whether we want to or not.
I'm not sure I exactly...
Well, we take it for granted that you are one of the individuals that are in Archer's circle of roommates and friends that frequent the house. I mean, undoubtedly, you're either Jim Barris or Ernie Luckman, Charles Freck, even Archer himself. Hell, you could be Donna for all I know.
As my superior, I figure you'd know all this stuff.
How the hell would I know? I'm just a little guy behind a big desk. You'd have to go way up the food chain to access that kind of info.
You know, instead of me doing any maintenance, you should send someone to the house once a month in uniform and have them say, "Good morning. I'm here to service the monitoring devices covertly installed on your premises." Maybe that sucker Archer would even pick up the bill.
Actually, I think Archer would probably kill the guy and then disappear.
If it's proven that Archer is in fact hiding that much.
Huh. Believe me, Archer is hiding a great deal. We've got more recent information on him analyzed, and there's no doubt about it. He's a ringer. A $3 bill. The guy's a phony. So keep on him until he drops, until we have enough to arrest him and make it stick.
You think he's high up in the, you know, Substance D network?
What we think is of no importance to your work. You report your limited conclusions, and we evaluate. You got it?
Okay, okay. I got it.
Archer folds his arms.
I'd say Archer is doomed if he's up to something. And I have a hunch from what you're saying that he is.
Freck arrives as the guys look at the Chevrolet.
Actually, the idling jets could be replaced with smaller jets that would compensate, and the pack just watches RPMs so it didn't overrev. Usually just backing off on the gas pedal causes it to upshift if the automatic linkage doesn't do it.
What are you grease monkeys up to?
Bob's got a bent choke shaft. How much does this Impala weigh?
Weighs about 1,000 pounds.
All right, 1,000 pounds, traveling at 80 miles per hour, builds up a force of...
That's 1,000 pounds with passengers in it and a full tank of gas.
For a fact, okay.
How many passengers?
12.
6 in the front, 6 in the back.
No, that's 11 in the back, and the driver's sitting alone in the front. The extra weight in the rear wheels is to keep the car from fishtailing.
What are we talking about, 12 50-pound passengers?
Kid's soccer team. Now, is that metal or plastic cleats? Metal cleats for safety.
Okay, my computations are complete. You are just hackle tweak, but you are a bug bite squared.
What kind of bug?
About to get fucked up, bitch beetle.
Hey, come on, right. Cool it, you guys.
Oh, step back, freckin' frack. Ernie's on the attack. What is this? Come on.
I'm desperately afraid.
I'm gonna knock your nads up into your nostrils for talking to your betters that way.
All right, I'm a technician. You are an interloper. You are constitutionally incapable of not shutting the fuck up.
Bring it!
Shut the fuck up!
No, proctology boy, I'm coming after you.
Shut it! Hey! I have the perfect tool for this job.
Barris hurries inside. Luckman turns back to Archer and Freck.
I was only kidding.
Fuck! What if he goes in there and he gets his gun and his silencer? I'm leaving. This place has become unsafe.
No, hey, Freck, no, come on. You're a bro, man. Stick around.
Barris reappears, clutching a hammer.
What's the hammer for, Barris?
No, I just saw it inside and I just thought, you know, I'd bring it along with me.
He runs at Luckman, who picks up a rock.
Ah! Same with this.
You ready?
Huh? Yeah, what do you want? Come on, hammer.
Shut up!
Make a move.
Don't like it. Ah.
Okay, if you guys are gonna kill each other, I'm splitting. It's getting very fucked up over here.
Hey, Freck.
The most dangerous kind of person is the one who's afraid of his own shadow.
What is that supposed to mean?
I'll tell you what it means, Freckles. It means that if you take too much of that stuff, you not only start seeing and feeling buggy bugs all over you, but you start talking like, and no one can understand you.
What'd you say, Barris? I didn't understand.
Come on. See, you guys are fucked up.
No, no, it is Yuggagagoo that are fucked up.
Hey, good, wreck yourself.
I'll take the car, you kill yourselves. Yuggagagoo.
Freck gets in his car and drives off. The others go back in the house.
So this guy's been going around claiming to be a world-famous imposter, right? Says he's posed at one time or another as a surgeon at Johns Hopkins, as a theoretical submolecular high-velocity particle research physicist on a federal grant at Harvard, as a Finnish novelist who won the Nobel Prize for Literature, as a deposed Argentinian president who was married to a go-go dancer from Chicago.
He got away with all that? He never got caught?
Okay, you broke my flow, so now I guess I'll just have to segue down to the near. And that's just it. You see, he didn't pose as any of those. He just posed as a world-famous imposter. Yeah, it came out later in the L.A. Times. They checked up, and he was pushing a broom at Disneyland or something. He saw that old DiCaprio movie, you know, the one where he plays a world-famous imposter before Leonardo hit his Elvis stage. And his first thought was, hey, I could pose as all those exotic guys and get away with it. But then his next thought was, hell, why bother? I could just pose as an imposter and it'd be a lot easier. They say that he made more money than the actual imposter, although I'm not sure if they adjust for inflation.
Fred watches the tape.
Well, you know, we all see imposters now and then, but not posing as subatomic physicists.
Oh, as a narc, you mean? Huh, what's a narc look like?
That's like asking what's an imposter look like. I once talked to this dealer who'd been busted. I asked him what the narc who busted him looked like.
What did he say? He looked just like us?
More so. So I guess the moral of that is, stay away from guys looking the same as us.
Arctor hallucinated Luckman and Barris turning into bugs.
Well, there are female narcs.
Oh, hey, I'd like to meet one of those. No, I don't mean a female. I mean just a narc, right. Knowing me, like positive.
Sure, so although, you can positively know. And you will, because when he slaps the cuffs on you, you'll know for sure when that day comes.
How could a guy do that? Poses a narc.
What?
What?
Poses a narc?
No, you said
poses a narc.
Fred zooms in on himself.
Oh, shit. Shit, I'm spaced. Poses a narc, wow. My brains are scrambled today.
Fred stops the security tape and looks thoughtful. He sits back in his chair and fast-forwards the tape at high speed. Six monitors in front of him show different views inside his house. Luckman is shown going into the kitchen and getting some food out of the microwave. He goes back to the living room and eats the food. Fred returns the tape to normal speed and watches as Luckman indicates to Barris that he is choking on something. Fred takes three pink pills from a plastic bag and swallows them. He gets up from his desk and looks around the surveillance room. He looks back at the security tape and sees Luckman staggering about in the kitchen. Luckman knocks some crockery on the floor, then throws something to get Barris's attention. Barris remains firmly rooted to his chair as Luckman thumps at his abdomen and then keels over on the kitchen floor. Barris gazes idly towards the kitchen as Luckman stops moving. Fred watches the tape with growing concern.
Christ, Barris, what the fuck?
Fred glances over his shoulder and picks up his mobile phone. He starts to dial a number. On the monitors, Barris gets up from his chair, picks the phone up and makes a call.
Oh. yes, hi. How are you? I have something somewhat emergent to report. I don't know if I should be summoning the inhalator squad or the resuscitation squad. I don't want to say it's not cardiac arrest, but it's either that or an involuntary asphyxiation level lists within the address. Yes, the address is simple, although I've never sent myself a piece of mail here. So 709er. Whose street is that street relevant?
Come on.
I'll tell you this much, it is a cul-de-sac. It's technically compliant on the street. Oh, line. Please report you won't be needing your assistance. Thank you.
Luckman sits up.
There you go. Took care of itself.
Now, Jesus.
You all right? Oh. There you go.
I must have passed out. Ow. Yeah. You, I was dreaming. You must have almost died.
Yeah.
Shit.
Luckman looks up at Barris.
And what were you doing while I was being escorted by dead relatives to the bright light? Well, Jackie, go off.
No. You saw me. I was on the phone. I summoned the paramedics. I sprung
bullshit.
Back
without delay. You were cleaning your pipe?
No, I was wrapping my pipe. You were unconscious.
You're the only person in the known universe who never heard of the Heimlich maneuver?
All right, I'm going to give you a little feedback since you seem to be proceeding through life like a cat without whiskers perpetually caught behind the refrigerator. Your life and watching you live it is like a gag reel of ineffective bodily functions. I swear to God that a toddler has a better understanding of the intricacies of chew, swallow, digest, don't kill yourself on your TV dinner. And yet, you've managed to turn this near-death fuck-up of yours into a moral referendum on me.
You are a monster!
You are a billy goat.
A sick, depraved,
At his house, Freck turns on the radio.
Charles Freck, becoming progressively more and more depressed by what was happening around him, decided finally to off himself. There was no problem in the circles where he hung out in putting an end to yourself. You just bought a large quantity of downers and took them with some cheap wine. The planning part had to do with the artifacts he wanted found on him by later archaeologists. He had spent several days deciding, much longer than he had spent deciding to kill himself. He would be found lying on his back, on his bed, with a copy of Ayn Rand's The Fountainhead and an unfinished letter to Exxon protesting the cancellation of his gas credit card. That way, he would indict the system and achieve something by his death, over and above what the death itself achieved. At the last moment, he changed his mind on a decisive issue and decided to drink the pills with a connoisseur wine instead of Ripple or Thunderbird. So he set off on one last drive, over to Tiny's Liquors, which specialized in fine wines, and bought a bottle of 2001 Azalea Springs Merlot, which set him back almost $70.
He wears a suit.
Back home again, he uncorked the wine, let it breathe, drank a few glasses of it, and tried to think of something meaningful but could not. And then, with a glass of Merlot, gulped down all the pills at once.
He lies back and waits for death.
However, he had been burned. Instead of quietly suffocating, Charles Freck began to hallucinate. The next thing he knew, a creature from between dimensions was standing beside his bed, looking down at him disapprovingly.
You gonna read me my sins?
The multi-eyed creature nods.
It's gonna take 100,000 hours.
Your sins will be read to you ceaselessly in shifts throughout eternity. The list will never end.
It unfurls the list.
The sins of Freck.
Charles Freck wished he could take back the last half hour of his life.
8-6 in the first grade, theft of fingernail clippers. 8 p.m. Theft. You did knowingly and with malice punch your baby sister, Evelyn. December. Theft of Christmas presents. 1 million lies.
Destruction. 1,000 years later, they had reached the sixth grade, the year he had discovered masturbation.
November 14th, Percodan. Vicodin. Cocaine.
Charles Freck thought, at least I got a good wine.
A lone street protester.
Where did Substance D come from? Why can't we stop it? The bigger this war gets, the more freedoms we lose, the more Substance D is on our streets. Can't you figure this out? Look around you. Look how far we've come. Humanity wasn't meant to live like this. Our every waking moment, tracked and traced and scanned. It's time to stop submitting to this tyranny. It's time to realize that we're being enslaved. Uh-oh, it's our tax dollars at work. Protect us from ourselves. Hey, guys, I used to be one of you. Stop selling out your own species.
Arctor watches as the cops taser the man, then bundle him into a van and drive off. Donna pulls up beside Arctor in her convertible.
Hey! Get in!
He grins at her.
You scared me.
Got something for you.
They drive together.
I'm seeing some crazy shit tonight.
What do you mean?
That fucking Barris. You know how he works? He doesn't kill anybody, but he hangs around until the situation arises where they die. And then he just sits there, and he sort of sets them up in the first place while he stays out of it. But I'm not sure how.
Hey, do you have that money for stuff? I need it tonight.
Yeah, I have it.
Okay. You know, I don't like Barris. And I don't trust him. Guy's fucking crazy. When you're around him, you start acting crazy. And then when you're not around him, you're fine. You're acting crazy now.
I am?
Yes.
Oh.
Hey, will you take me to a concert next weekend at Anaheim Stadium?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Which night?
It's Sunday afternoon.
Whatever you want.
Well, I'll just drive over to my place. You have the money, you'll give it to me. We'll kick back, drop some death, maybe get some tequila.
All right.
Octa sits back and grins.
All right.
Later, Donna and Octa sit on a sofa together.
Hey, Donna, do you like cats?
Drippy little things. Moving along, about a foot above the ground.
Above? You mean on the ground?
Just dripping. Behind furniture, little spring flowers with blue in them that come up first.
Yeah.
Before someone stomps on them and they're all gone.
It's like you know me. You can read me. Can I put my arms around you?
He leans towards her and she shifts uneasily.
I want to hug you,
okay? No.
What?
Look, I do a lot of coke, okay? And I just have to be really careful because I do a lot of coke, so just leave my body alone, okay?
Okay.
Octa shakes his head irritably.
You know, fuck it.
He gets up.
Hey, I'm sorry. I just don't like it when people grope my body, and I have to watch out for that because I snort so much coke.
That's fucking lame. I gotta go.
Your car's not fixed. I drove you here. I'll drive you back.
He walks out.
Bob!
She runs after him.
Bob! Wait! Please. Please wait. I didn't mean, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. I'm so out of it right now. Sometimes after I've worked really hard all day, please come back. Come on. The tequila.
How much do you do?
She looks around awkwardly.
Not that much. I don't shoot up. I never have and I never will. Once you start shooting, you know, like 6 months, maybe. Even tap water, you get a habit.
You have a habit.
She glares at him.
We all do. I mean, so what? What's the difference? I'm happy. Aren't you happy?
Listen to me. I think it's starting to get bad.
She looks down, then regards him petulantly.
You know what I want to do someday, Bob? I want to move north, live on a farm near the mountains, in a cabin.
Can I go with you?
I hope so.
She lets go of his hand. Later, Octa walks into his bedroom with a spaced-out young blonde woman in tow. He goes over to the bed and pulls a large stash of drugs out from under the mattress.
All right. You weren't kidding.
He hands her several pink capsules and she swallows them all. He knocks back a couple himself and puts the bag of drugs to one side. He gets up and kisses the blonde.
Do you have a toothbrush?
One.
It's great. Teeth are teeth. I'll brush them.
He checks his breath, then swigs from a bottle of beer.
Bathroom is?
What bathroom?
She flops back on the bed.
In the house.
She looks around dreamily.
What are those guys out there? Rolling joints and rattling on and on. They live here with you?
Two of them do.
She smiles.
So you're gay?
Try not to be, that's why I called you tonight.
So you're putting up a pretty good battle against it.
Better believe it.
Guess I'm about to find out. If you're a latent gay, then you'll want me to take the initiative. You want me to undress you?
Sure.
She unbuckles his belt and he takes his jacket off. Later, Arctor is lying on top of the bed in just his boxer shorts. The blonde is beside him asleep on her back, partially covered by a sheet. Arctor wakes up, looks over at the blonde, and starts when he sees its Donna lying beside him. He stares at her, then reaches across to the lamp on the bedside table. He knocks it off, then looks round at Donna, who has turned back into the blonde. He frowns, shakes his head and rolls onto his own side of the bed. He glances over at the blonde, then turns away holding his head.
Oh, Jesus, fuck!
The screen fades to black. Now in his scramble suit as Agent Fred, Arctor sits at his desk in the surveillance room, resting his head on his arms. He's roused by the sound of the phone.
Hello?
Fred. We've processed some more recent material on you. How are you feeling?
Okay.
He takes a pill.
Any problems?
I wanted to fight with my girl.
Any confusion? Are you experiencing any difficulty identifying persons or objects? Any language disorientation?
No.
Can you come back over to room 203?
What did you find to be a problem?
We'll take that up when you get here.
He hangs up and tosses the phone down on the desk. The security monitors run speeded up footage of him having sex with the blonde woman the night before. He glances away from the monitors. When he looks back, he sees the woman lying asleep beside him as Donna. Intrigued, he zooms in on the image. Inside his scramble suit, he frowns as he watches himself reach over her to the bedside table. He freezes the tape, then flicks a switch on a box next to him, which causes a three-dimensional hologram of Donna's image to be generated. He gets up and looks down at the hologram of the naked Donna. He presses a button on the box, and the hologram changes back to one of the blonde. He switches back and forth between the two holograms.
Connie. Donna.
He leaves the hologram on Donna and steps back from the machine. He presses a button on another machine, and the screen goes black. Now out of his scramble suit, Arctor is in room 203. He wears a strange mechanical headset and goggles while sitting at a desk prodding squares on computer screens. A medic in a white coat makes some notes.
All right, Fred, very good.
And this next test, with your eyes covered, reach out and feel an object with each hand. You were to tell us if the object presented to your left hand is identical to the object presented to your right.
A second medic places a small plastic elephant in each of Arctor's hands, and he feels them. Later, the first medic hangs up the headset, and a blurry-looking Arctor gets up to leave.
One more thing, Fred. We need an updated blood test. So go down the hall to the pathology lab and they'll fix you up.
And by the time you get back here, we should almost be through with our evaluation.
I'll be upstairs with Hank.
You certainly seem much more depressed today than you did when we first saw you.
He looks back and sees the medics have changed into the original pair.
Pardon?
Last week, when we first saw you, you were kidding and laughing. Did you ever get her the flowers?
Octa looks blank and quickly pulls the hood of his scramble suit over his head before walking out into the corridor.
Crazy job they gave me. But if I wasn't doing it, someone else would be. And they might get it wrong. They might set Arctur up, plant drugs on him, and collect a reward. Better it be me, despite the disadvantages. Just protecting everyone from Barris is justification in itself.
In the changing room, he gets out of his scramble suit.
What the hell am I talking about? I must be nuts. I know Bob Arctur. He's a good person. He's up to nothing. At least nothing too bad.
He steps out of the police station.
In fact, he works for the Orange County Sheriff's Office covertly, which is probably why Barris is after him.
He walks beside a road.
But that wouldn't explain why the Orange County Sheriff's Office is after him.
He walks up to his house.
Something big is definitely going down in this house. This run-down, rubble-filled house. With its weed-patch yard and cat box that never gets emptied. What a waste of a truly good house. So much could be done with it. A family and children could live here. It was designed for that. Such a waste. They ought to confiscate it and put it to better use.
He opens the fly screen, then the front door, and goes inside. He looks down the hall, then closes the front door behind him.
I'm supposed to act like they aren't here. Assuming there's a they at all. It may just be my imagination. Whatever it is that's watching, it's not human. Unlike little dark-eyed Donna, it doesn't ever blink.
He looks around the sitting room.
What does a scanner see? Into the head? Down into the heart? Does it see into me? Into us? Clearly or darkly? I hope it sees clearly because I can't any longer see into myself. I see only Mark. I hope for everyone's sake the scanners do better. Because if the scanner sees only darkly the way I do, then I'm cursed and cursed again and will only wind up dead this way, knowing very little and getting that little fragment wrong too.
He lies back on the sofa.
You show what we regard more as competition phenomenon than impairment.
Yeah?
Competition between the left and the right hemispheres of your brain. It's like you have two signals that interfere with each other by carrying conflicting information.
It's as if you have two fuel gauges on your car. They're studying the same amount of fuel, but one says your tank is full, the other registers empty. They can't both be right, and you as the driver have only an indirect relationship to the fuel tank via the gauges.
So what does all this mean?
Well, I'm sure you know already. You've been experiencing it without knowing why or what it is.
The two hemispheres of my brain are competing?
Yes.
The medics nod and exchange a look.
Why?
Substance D. It often causes that functionally, and this is what the tests confirm. Damage has taken place to the normally dominant left hemisphere, and the right hemisphere is attempting to compensate. Cross-cutting, we call it, related to split brain phenomena. We could perform a right hemispherectomy, but
Will this ever go away?
Probably. It's a functional impairment.
It may be organic damage. It may be permanent. Time will tell, and only after you've been off substance D for a long while.
Octo shakes his head.
I'll never take substance D again for the rest of my life.
How much are you taking now?
Not much. More recently because of job stress.
The medics exchange a look and make more notes. Back in his scramble suit, Octo walks down a corridor,
death is swallowed up in victory. Behold, I tell you the sacred secret now. We shall not all sleep in death.
Barris plays Fred, Hank, and a uniformed officer his evidence.
We'll do the other half of Southern California tomorrow night. The Air Force arsenal at Vandenberg will be hit for automatic weapons.
What about that anthrax Anwar ripped off for us? Aren't we supposed to carry the stuff up to the watershed area?
We need the weapons first. Drugs in the water supply is step B.
Okay, but I gotta go. I got a customer.
I can also identify the aforementioned terrorist cell. It's repeatedly indicated throughout the course of my observations.
Do you have any more material of this sort, or is this tape substantially it?
Oh, no, I have a veritable cornucopia, and much of it is directly referencing the organization and its directives.
Who are these people? What organization?
It is primarily Arctur and Hawthorne. I have coded notes here, which may be of some interest to you. My own cryptology is very difficult to...
As of now, I'm impounding all of this. It is our property temporarily, and we will sort through it ourselves. You will be on hand to explain anything to us if and when we get to the point where we feel we need anything explained. Mr. Barris, you will not be released pending our study of this material. You'll be charged as a formality to keep you available with knowingly giving the authorities false information. This, of course, is just a pretext for your own safety.
Barris springs from his chair.
I just want to go to the Galapagos.
Is that satisfactory, Mr. Barris?
Not entirely. Though I wonder, when I'm locked down, may I be provided with some lotion and perhaps some...
The uniformed cop takes Barris away. Fred shuts the door behind him and takes a seat opposite Hank.
So, what do you think of Barris's evidence?
Seems like what he played, the little we heard anyway, sounded pretty genuine to me.
It's fake. Worthless. Made on a home computer.
Maybe you're right.
Hank opens a file.
Is that my medical report you have there?
Yep.
What does it say?
That you're completely bonkers.
Octa looks concerned.
Completely?
There's maybe two brain cells that still light up. Rest is just... short circuits and sparks.
Two.
Hank puts the file aside.
Listen, when you go to pick up your next paycheck, there will be a substantial difference this time.
I get some sort of bonus for this having happened to me on duty?
No. Read your penal code. An officer who willingly becomes an addict and doesn't report it promptly is subject to a misdemeanor charge, a fine, and or 6 months. You'll probably just be fined.
Willingly?
No one held a gun to your head and shot you up. No one dropped something in your soup. You knowingly and willingly took an addictive drug, brain destructive and disorienting.
I had to.
You could have pretended to. Most officers manage to cope with it. And from the quantities you were taking, my God, Fred. Hey, you know what I would do if I were you? Once you get out of New Path, and you know, it's all over.
But it may never be over.
Hank fixes him with a stare.
Cigarette?
I'm getting off that, too. Everything.
Including chocolate.
And?
Huh. Like I tell my kids.
I've got two kids. Two girls. Little ones.
Inside his suit, Arctur smiles.
I don't believe you do.
Arctur's smile fades.
You're not supposed to.
Maybe not.
Arctur looks across at the ever-changing face of Hank as he puffs on his cigarette. He glimpses the blonde woman in Hank's morphing and becomes agitated. Arctur glances at Hank's desk and squirms uneasily in his chair. As he looks, a model eagle on the desktop seems to come to life.
Listen, is there anywhere specific you'd like to go?
Arctur grimaces.
Maybe over to Donna Hawthorne's place. From the information you brought in, sounds like you guys are pretty close.
Arctur gets a grip on himself.
Yes, we are. How do you know that?
Process of elimination. I know who you aren't, and we're talking about a very small group of people that we hoped would lead us higher. And maybe Barris will. I pieced it together a long time ago that you're Arctor.
Arctor looks up at Hank curiously.
I'm who?
He looks thoughtful for a moment.
I'm Bob Arctor.
Hank makes a call on his mobile.
Yeah, get me a Donna Hawthorne's number or just patch me through when you locate her.
Thanks.
But you are in a very bad way, my friend. Maybe Jim Barris poisoned you. We're really interested in Barris, not you. The whole scanning of the house was to keep an eye on him. We hoped to draw him here, and we did. He is deep into it with some very dangerous people.
Then, I'm a what?
Well, we had to get to Barris to set him up. So how we arranged it was, he grew progressively more and more suspicious that you were an undercover cop, trying to nail him or use him to get higher. So he did what you or anyone would have done. Hey, Donna. Yeah, hi, this is a buddy of Bob's, Arctor. Yeah, listen, he's in a bad way. Yeah, way bad. I was wondering if I could ask a favor of you. You're a sweetheart. Yeah. I'm sure he'll appreciate it very much. Great, thanks. Good news. Donna Hawthorne said she'd pick you up out front in about 5 minutes.
Arctor goes to the door.
You fuckers.
Arctor steps out of the office into the corridor and walks off. Hank stubs out his cigarette and gets up from his desk. He steps out into the corridor and checks that Arctor has gone. Then Hank hurries off through another door. Hank walks down a corridor stacked with boxes of paperwork and goes into another room on his right. He shuts the door behind him and opens a cabinet at the far end of the room. He removes his scramble suit, revealing him to be Donna. She hangs the scramble suit up in the cupboard and closes it. She adjusts her hair, then goes out of the room. Later, Arctor, distressed, is curled up beside her as she drives.
You're a good man, Bob. You've been dealt a bad deal. This is not fair, but it has to be this way. I've got to just wait it out, just get through it. And someday, a long time from now, you'll see the way you saw before. There'll be a recognition, and some spark in a disguised form will reveal itself to you and guide you.
A completely broken-looking Arctor sits shivering in the passenger seat. It's dark as Donna pulls up outside a building called the New Path Recovery Center. Donna helps Arctor inside, where he collapses, vomiting. Donna looks round as two orderlies come through a doorway.
Substance D?
She nods.
Ate his head. Another loser.
It's easy to win.
She turns to Arctor.
Anybody can win.
Donna puts a blanket the orderlies give her around Arctor's shoulders. She leaves him shivering next to the pile of vomit. Later, Arctor sits with other detoxing New Path patients.
Living and unliving things are exchanging properties.
The drive of unliving things is stronger than the drive of living things.
A tea urn seems to speak.
The living should never be used to serve the purposes of the dead. But the dead should, if possible, serve the purposes of the living.
The voice actually belongs to Freck, who is another of the patients. Octo looks down at a hot drink he's holding in his hands, and the screen fades to black. Octo pushes a mop and bucket along a corridor. An orderly, Mike, approaches him.
Hey, good news. I think I got you transferred to one of our farms.
Can I work with animals?
I think you'll be working with plants for a while. Out in the open where you can touch the ground.
I want to be with something living.
The ground is living. The earth is still alive. Do you have any agricultural background?
I worked in an office.
Well, you'll be outside from now on.
A New Path van parks up beside some agricultural vehicles. Mountains rise up to the sky in the distance. A female orderly gets out and opens the van door for Arctur, who climbs out, clutching a holdall. A large, burly man, the farm manager, approaches him.
Your name is Bruce.
My name is Bruce.
We're gonna try you on farming for a period, Bruce.
Okay.
Staff thought you'd be better off. I think you'll like it here.
I think I'll like it here.
Come on, I'll show you where you're gonna be sleeping.
They walk off.
You like mountains, Bruce? Look up. Mountains. No snow, but mountains.
I like mountains.
The air is good here.
I like air.
Yeah. We all like air, Bruce. We really do. That we have in common.
They arrive at a small single cabin.
4G. Yours is 4G. Can you remember that?
4G. Will I be seeing my friends?
What, you mean from back where you were? The Santa Ana facility?
Mm-hmm. Mike and Laura. And Mike and Eddie. And
the people from the residence facilities, they don't come out to the farms, Bruce. See, these are closed operations.
Closed operations.
But, you know, you might get back up there a couple times a year. You know, they're gatherings, you know, at Christmas and the next one is Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
So you might see them in 3 months.
Now wearing a shirt and tie, Mike, the orderly from the recovery center, is in a burger bar. He collects his order from the counter and walks through the restaurant to a table where Donna is sitting.
Hey, Audrey. Glad you could meet.
So tell me, are they getting paranoid about him?
No, not at all. The guy's so burnt out.
And we're still convinced they're growing the stuff.
They have to be. Who else?
All right. I just wonder if it even matters.
It matters. Audrey, it matters when we can prove that New Path is the one growing, manufacturing, and distributing.
How does he look? I mean, do you think he's going to be able to pull through for us?
I guess all we can do is hope that when he finally gets in there, a few charred brain cells will flicker on and some distant instinct will kick in.
It's just such a cost to pay.
Yeah. There's no other way to get in there. I couldn't, and think how long I tried. If they got that place locked up tight, they're only gonna let a burnt-out husk like Bruce in. Harmless. You have to be, or they won't take the risk.
Yeah, but to sacrifice someone, a living person, without them ever knowing it. I mean, if he'd understood, if he had volunteered, but he doesn't know, and he never did. He didn't volunteer for this.
Sure he did. It was his job.
It wasn't his job to get addicted. We took care of that. Look, Mike, I gotta get out. I can't do this again. I want it to end. I lay in bed at night and I can't sleep and I just think, shit, we are colder than they are.
I don't think so. You know, I believe God's MO is to transmute evil into good. And if he's active here, he's doing that now. Although our eyes can't perceive it. The whole process is hidden beneath the surface of our reality. It will only be revealed later. And even then, the people of the future, our children's children, will never truly know this awful time that we've gone through and the losses we took. Maybe some footnote in a minor history book. A brief mention with no list of the fallen.
Donna looks down thoughtfully. Arctur wanders through a field of maize with a crop sprayer strapped to his back. He uses a lever to pump up the pressure in its tank. As he walks along, a leaf from one of the plants brushes over his face. He appears not to notice. He comes to a halt and looks down, then looks to his right. He gets down on his hands and knees and sees thousands of small blue flowers growing up between the crops. He looks from left to right and sees more of the flowers. A man in his 50s wearing a grey suit steps up to Arctur.
You're seeing the flower of the future. But not for you, Bruce.
Not for me.
No, you've had too much of a good thing already. Get up. Stop worshiping. This isn't your god anymore, although it once was.
Gone. Flower is gone.
No, you just can't see them. Back to work.
The man joins the farm manager.
I saw. Back to work, Bruce.
The man and the farm manager head off together.
I saw death rising from the earth. From the ground itself. In one blue field.
Arctur kneels down and picks one of the flowers.
A present for my friends. At Thanksgiving.
He hides the flower inside his boot. Arctur straightens up and plods slowly off through the tall maze, which stretches to the mountains in the distance, the crops concealing the low-growing blue flowers. The screen slowly fades to black. Green captions on black. This has been a story about people who are punished entirely too much for what they did. I love them all. Here is a list to whom I dedicate my love. To Gaylene, deceased. To Ray, deceased. To Francie, permanent psychosis. To Kathy, permanent brain damage. To Jim, deceased. To Val, massive permanent brain damage. To Nancy, permanent psychosis. To Joanne, permanent brain damage. To Maren, deceased. To Nick, deceased. To Terry, deceased. To Dennis, deceased. To Phil, permanent pancreatic damage. To Sue, permanent vascular damage. To Jerry, permanent psychosis and vascular damage, and so forth. In memoriam, these were comrades whom I had. There are no better. They remain in my mind, and the enemy will never be forgiven. The enemy was their mistake in playing. Let them play again in some other way and let them be happy. Philip K. Dick. ITFC audio description by John Walskill, read by Aileen Downey. Unit production manager Susan Kerr. First Assistant Director Vincent Palmer Jr. Second Assistant Director Kathleen Tull. Cast, in order of appearance: Charles Freck, Rory Cochrane, James Barris, Robert Downey Jr., Brown Bear Lodge host Mitch Baker, Bob Arctur, Keanu Reeves, additional Fred Scramble suit voice Sean Allen, voice from headquarters Cliff Habby, Cop Stephen Chester Prince, Donna Hawthorne, Winona Ryder. Waitress, Natasha Valdez. Additional Hank Scramble suit voice, Mark Turner. Ernie Luckman, Woody Harlson. Medical Deputy Number 2, Chambly Ferguson. Medical Deputy Number 1, Angela Rauner. Arctur's Daughter Number 1, Eliza Stevens. Arctur's Daughter Number 2, Sarah Menchaca. Arctur's Wife, Melody Chase. Freck Suicide Narrator, Leif Anders. Creature, Turk Pipkin. Street Prophet, Alex Jones. Connie, Lisa Marie Neumeyer. Medical Officer Number 1, Wilbur Penn. Medical Officer Number 2, Ken Webster. New Path Staff Member Number 1, Hugo Perez. New Path Staff Member Number 2, Rommel Sulet. Mike, Damien Clark. New Path Resident Number 1, Christopher Ryan. New Path Resident Number 2, Leela Plummer. New Path Farm Manager, Jason Douglas. Donald, Marco Perella. Soundtrack album on Lakeshore Records. Fog, written by Thomas York, Philip Selway, Jonathan Greenwood, Colin Greenwood, and Edward O'Brien, performed by Radiohead, courtesy of Capitol Records, under license from EMI Film and Television Music. This motion picture, copyright 2006, Warner Brothers Entertainment, Inc. Story and screenplay, copyright 2006, Warner Brothers Entertainment, Inc. Original score, copyright 2006, Warner Olive Music, LLC. All material is protected by copyright laws of the United States and all countries throughout the world. All rights reserved. Country of first publication, United States of America. Warner Brothers is the author of this motion picture for purposes of copyright and other laws. Any unauthorized exhibition, distribution, or copying of this film, or any part thereof, including soundtrack, is an infringement of the relevant copyright and will subject the infringer to severe civil and criminal penalties. The story. All names, characters, and incidents portrayed in this production are fictitious. No identification with actual persons, places, buildings, and products is intended or should be inferred. In eternal memory, Louis Mackey. The Cloud Shield logo of Warner Brothers Pictures.